Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Wednesday morning. It's April 14, 2021. Good to be with you and asking for your prayers as we are in the middle of our Ave Maria Radio.net spring membership drive. And it's it's a very important week for us, and we're celebrating 25 years on the air of Catholic Radio with Ave Maria Radio. So if you can keep us in your prayers, and if you want to hear what's going on, you can always check it out online, avemariaradio.net. And as I always say, you need to support both your local brick-and-mortar radio station, if you have one in your neighborhood, and EWTN, because we work together hand-in-hand to bring you great 24/7 programming. So today on the program, we're going to be checking in with the communications manager for the World Apostolate of Fatima, Barb Ernster. They're having a conference, Reclaiming the Family. We'll tell you all about that. That's coming up at 9:15. And at 9:30 Eastern Time, if you're listening in the Eastern Time Zone or 28 minutes past the hour, I am very excited to talk about this letter that the Pope sent to the Bishop of Avila on the 50th anniversary of St. Teresa of Avila being canonized. This is a beautiful letter he wrote about the power of spiritual motherhood, which is near and dear to my heart because I'm a spiritual mom. And of course, St. Teresa of Avila is my favorite saint of all time. I was named after her, and I have just a very strong connection with her and some many godsidences that have happened to me because of her intercession that I've told at many a conference, and hopefully I'll have some time to share one of those with you today as well. But I'm so excited about this because this will help others around the world understand not only more about this great saint and female doctor of the church, but also about this whole idea of what is spiritual motherhood? What does that mean? Because there are many of us who don't have children physically, but we are all moms because of our nature, because of our female nature of nurturing. And St. Teresa of Avila brought this home in many of her writings and her teachings and the way she led her life. So, beautiful letter from the Holy Father that he sent to the Bishop of Avila, and I'm going to share a little bit about that, as well as the importance of the communion of saints. I think Catholics really need to dive in more deeply to learn more about our saints. Hebrews says there's this great cloud of witnesses, and it's so true. We do not worship the saints. Worship is for God alone. But they are our brothers and sisters. And if you remember that beautiful line from St. Therese of Lisieux, also a doctor of the church, by the way, she said, I want to spend my time in heaven doing good on earth. And they intercede for us. Just like if we were to go to someone here on earth and say, can you say a prayer for me? I'm really troubled about this. I need some insight. Can you pray for me? So there's not worship for the saints, but there is prayer. We ask them to intercede for us. And Scripture is very clear on this. The Catechism is very clear on this. I love it so much. I love the teachings on the saints so much that I wrote a book about it, Girlfriends and Other Saints, My Companions of Faith, Journey Along the Companions of Faith, because I've had so many experiences with the saints. St. Catherine of Siena and St. Teresa of Avila are my top two, but I have many others. So anyhow, we'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. And then a lot of news out of Rome as well. The Holy Father today at the audience put out a beautiful message regarding prayer. And it's one of the things that we're going to be talking about at our weekend free online conference, Listening for God. I believe there's going to be a story on it in the National Catholic Register today or tomorrow, because so many of the people who are speaking are from, you guessed it, EWTN. But the idea of prayer, of making ourselves available to God and strengthening our relationship with Him through prayer, is really important. And the Pope highlighted this in his audience message today. So Joan Lewis will be discussing that, along with what's happening with openings in Italy, in terms of possible pilgrimages coming up again and tourism. They're trying to really salvage the 2021 pilgrimage and tourism season. So let's hope that we can do that, because it's so important for us to trace our Catholic roots. Okay, already 4 minutes past the hour. It is a Wednesday morning in the Easter season. And as I mentioned, I'm going to be talking with our friends at the World Apostolate of Fatima. And then we'll also be discussing the issues of the day from Rome with our dear sister Joan Lewis. And I'll also have some highlights from a beautiful letter Pope Francis wrote about my favorite saint. And I know she's also a favorite saint of many of you, St. Teresa of Avila. pray for us. All right, let's take a look at the news. It's a Wednesday, and there's a lot of news as usual. Well, Pope Francis is saying today that an essential task of the Catholic Church is to teach people how to pray. He said the Church is, after all, a great school of prayer, and the message came from his general audience in a live stream that was conducted today from the Vatican. He says this is an essential task of the Church, to teach people how to pray, to transmit from generation to generation the lamp of faith with the oil of prayer. At his Wednesday audience, the Holy Father encouraging Christians to examine their lives to ensure that personal prayer is a priority, warning that one of the devil's tactics to attack the Church is to prevent people from praying. Everything in the Church originates in prayer. Everything grows thanks to prayer. When the enemy, the evil one, wants to fight the Church, he does so, first of all, by trying to drain its sources by preventing it from praying. Pro-life groups are criticizing the Biden administration for allowing the distribution of the abortion pill through the mail during the COVID-19 virus. With this action, the Biden administration has made it clear, Jeannie Mancini from the March for Life says, that it will prioritize abortion over women's safety. Allowing unsupervised chemical abortions by way of telemedicine without requiring timely access to medical care will indeed put women's health at risk. In a letter Monday from the commissioner of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to the American College of OBGYNs, the FDA announcing it would exercise enforcement discretion on its regulations of the abortion pill. The acting FDA commissioner, Janet Woodcock, saying she would allow for the pill regimen to be prescribed remotely and sent to women through the mail or through a mail order pharmacy. Since 2000, the FDA had placed the abortion pill regimen on its list of risk and evaluation of mitigation and strategy, that list reserved for higher risk drugs and procedures. And again, under the regimen, the abortion pill could only be described in person by a certified prescriber in a health clinic setting. Prosecutors are investigating the death of a young woman in Argentina following a legal chemical abortion. It's the first such recorded death after last year's legalization of abortion. Local media reporting a 23-year-old student who was prescribed a medication last week died on Sunday. And in other news this morning, Texas is looking to ban gender reassignment surgery for children. A Republican state senator, Bob Hall, says that procedure should be off limits to everybody under the age of 18. Under his bill, physicians who perform the surgery on children could lose their medical license. Police arresting around 60 people in Minneapolis yesterday, the third night of protests and riots over the police shooting death of Dante Wright. Minnesota State Police Patrol Colonel Matt Langer says the arrests were for what he called riot and criminal behaviors in Brooklyn Center.
As the evening unfolded, the event devolved and became more contentious, and tensions rose, and once again we saw groups choose to actively begin trying to compromise the fence that is securing the police department, began throwing objects.
Langer said those who destroy property and throw objects make it unsafe for people to come and exercise their First Amendment rights. The ACLU chapter in Minnesota tweeting that Brooklyn Center passed a resolution banning unnecessary crowd control measures, including rubber bullets, tear gas, and confining protesters in small areas. The former Minnesota police officer who killed a black man during that traffic stop last weekend might face criminal charges as soon as today. Here's reporter Ron Allen.
The officer who fired the fatal shot and the city's police chief both resigned amid growing outrage over the death of Dante Wright. Kim Potter, with 26 years on the force, saying it was in the best interest of the community for her to resign immediately.
Dante Wright was pulled over near Minneapolis on Sunday afternoon for having expired plates and was being arrested for an outstanding warrant when he tried to flee. Police say now former police officer Kim Potter may have meant to tase Wright but fired her gun accidentally. Police officers, meanwhile, are fortifying the home of the officer who fatally shot a 20-year-old black man in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. New York Times reporting deputies have built concrete barriers and wrapped fencing around the home of now former police officer Kim Potter. The Washington County Attorney's Office, again, is reviewing the shooting and expects, as we mentioned, to have a charging decision as soon as today. Meanwhile, Mark Mayfield tells us that jurors in the trial of ex-Minneapolis cop Derek Chauvin will hear from more defense witnesses today.
Six testified yesterday, ending with an expert who said that Chauvin was justified in his use of force against George Floyd. He called the actions reasonable based on training. Chauvin's lawyers are trying to prove that Floyd died of a drug overdose and heart disease. Prosecutors argue he was killed with his last breath recorded on video.
The search is on for at least a dozen people missing after a boat capsized on the southern tip of Louisiana in the Gulf of Mexico. Six people were rescued yesterday with the help of Good Samaritans. They're back in the water assisting the Coast Guard as it scours the water by sea and by air. U.S. health agencies are calling for an immediate pause in the using of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine because of blood clots. Medical expert Dr. Natalie Azar says it's understandably a scary headline for folks who are reading it today.
In the vast majority of people, the benefit would far outweigh this risk. The problem is that we don't yet know how to identify somebody who would be at risk, other than to say that it appears to occur in younger people and more predominantly in female. Birth control, things like that could certainly play a part. We just don't know yet.
Six women between the ages of 18 and 48 developing blood clots a week or two after they were vaccinated. One woman reportedly died. Some critics of vaccine passports, meanwhile, say the idea, which some think should be needed to access parts of the economy, would hurt minorities the most. Texas State Professor Emily Brunson is co-chair of Communivax, which is a national coalition that studies equitable vaccination distribution.
That could really draw some heavy lines or deepen divisions that already exist. Between groups.
Montana's Governor Greg Gianforte has issued an executive order barring his state from having anything to do with so-called vaccine passports. In a release on Tuesday, Gianforte saying he strongly encouraged residents in Montana to get the vaccine, but he said getting vaccinated is entirely voluntary and will not be mandated by his state, Montana, or compelled through vaccine passports or other means. The governors, meanwhile, of Florida, Idaho, Texas, and Utah have also issued similar executive orders in the past several days, while the governors of Georgia, Iowa, and Tennessee are denouncing the passports, though falling short of issuing an all-out ban. Several U.S. senators are fighting Major League Baseball's decision to move their All-Star game out of Atlanta due to a recently passed voting law. Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz says he wants to end the league's immunity from antitrust laws.
Major League Baseball has had an exemption from the antitrust laws for nearly 100 years. It was made up by the U.S. Supreme Court. It's been in effect nearly 100 years. The other major sports leagues don't enjoy that exception.
Cruz saying it's time baseball play by the same rules as all the other sports leagues. The Internal Revenue Service says if you file electronically and sign up for direct deposit, the overwhelming majority of taxpayers, well, you'll get that refund some 3 weeks later.
If you file electronically, you choose direct deposit, we expect that 9 out of 10 refunds are going to be issued within 21 days.
Spokesman Eric Smith says if you send in your return by mail, you're at the mercy of delays within the Postal Service, and you'll also be waiting on a paper check in order to get your return. He says sending your return in early is advisable in order to get it processed before the bulk of returns are then submitted. Queen Elizabeth II returning to her royal duties after mourning the death of her husband, Prince Philip. The Guardian newspaper saying the Queen resuming her duties yesterday, just days after the death last Friday of her 99-year-old husband. The two had been married to each other for over 70 years. Prince Philip's funeral will be held this weekend on Saturday, but only 30 people are invited due to the coronavirus. And the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, saying he would not attend, so another royal family member could take his place. The Ford Mustang is having a birthday, turning 57 this weekend on Saturday. Ted Ryan is an archive specialist with the Ford Motor Company and says that when the Mustang was launched all the way back in April of 1969, it was a car that was perfect for the baby boomer generation looking for their own vehicle.
They found their own music with Elvis and the Beatles, and then the Mustang comes along, and that sporty, fun appeal for everybody, and it was the perfect market for the emerging new generation.
And earlier this week, it was announced that for the second year in a row, the Mustang is the world's best-selling sports car. Very interesting. Almost 15 minutes past the hour. It is a Wednesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. If you get a chance, I highly recommend you go to the National Catholic Register, ncregister.com, or the Catholic News Agency, and check out some of the stories related to the Holy Father's audience message today, as well as this letter he wrote to the bishops of Avila regarding St. Teresa of Avila, the 50th anniversary of her canonization. She's the first female doctor of the church. And I also encourage you to read his message on prayer. One of the things that we really try to emphasize here on Catholic Radio and on EWTN, Ave Maria Radio, and all of our affiliates is the importance of getting closer to the Lord in prayer. And prayer comes in many shapes and forms, but the evil one, as the Pope says in this announcement today during his audience message, tries to keep us busy, tries to keep us fearful, tries to separate us from the love of God. And if he can do that, he can cause a lot of confusion within and without the church. But it's really important to take the time to listen to these statements and to read them and to do what Our Lady did, ponder them. Who ponders anymore? I would highly recommend, this is just a suggestion, you're adults, you can do what you like, but this is something that I do. When I find a particular interesting or powerful teaching from a bishop, a letter, or let's say an announcement or something, or there's an apostolic letter or a message that a bishop or the Pope has put out, I will print it up. I'm old school. I like to have the hard copy in my hand so I can highlight certain lines. And I will take it to my prayer time. And if I can do that, I'll take it to adoration and just sit there and read it along with my Bible and my Magnificat. But to really think and ponder about what the leaders of the church are telling us about a particular situation or a particular saint. So I have just kind of gone over a portion of the letter this morning in preparing for the show, and I want to share some of that with you at the bottom of the hour. But I encourage you to take the time to go to CatholicNewsAgency.com or NCRegister.com, also Vatican.va, and see what the Pope is telling us today about prayer and about the great saint, Saint Teresa of Avila. We need to unpack the teachings of the church, and especially of the saints, I think, more frequently. There is this treasure trove of the saints with over 10,000 saints that have gone before us and are now a part of this great cloud of witnesses, as it says in Hebrews. And Saint Teresa of Avila, and I'm not just saying this because she was my fave, she was a powerhouse in terms of mysticism, Catholic spirituality, and just her relationship with the Lord and her boldness with God and how she came to him. One of her famous sayings, "Lord, if this is the way you treat your friends, no wonder you have so few." She's a great, great witness for us, and we'll learn more about her later on this morning. 877-288. Oh, I just gave out the pledge drive number. That's a number we give out to raise funds for Ave Maria. Sorry, my brain is a little bit fried this morning. Okay, 877-578-782. I can't remember our toll-free number. Andrew, write it down for me. Sorry, my brain is all messed up because I'm giving out numbers and links for the Ave Maria Radio Pledge Drive. Anyway, let's take a break. Obviously, I need one, and we'll be right back on a Wednesday.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company, and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Hello, Steve Ray here from Footprints of God Pilgrimages, and I'm so excited to announce two domestic pilgrimages this time. One to the Shrines of Wisconsin, where we're going to be joined by Cardinal Raymond Burke. We're going to have a consecration to St. Joseph and Our Lady of Good Help for the apparition of Mary that happened there. Also, we're going to St. Augustine, Florida, where the Catholic Church actually started, the first Mass ever, and we're going to be joined by Father Frank Pavone.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage line.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
This program brought to you in part by the nonprofit Angelicum Academy.
This is Father Joseph Essio. I have an important message for all you homeschooling families. You can get an outstanding and fully accredited Catholic college education and save $100,000. To learn how, go to angelicum.net. That's angelicum.net. Earn 75 college credits and an associate's degree in high school for just $3,500 a year. And earn your BA degree just 1 year later at age 19. Check this out at angelicum.net.
Coming up on Saturday, May 1st, there's a powerful event, Reclaiming the Family Through Fathers. It's a Fatima St. Joseph Conference for men and women, and this is so, so important to really help families become stronger and embrace the faith more deeply, especially with what's going on in our world and in the church. The website is reclaimingthefamily.com. Barb Ernster is on the phone with us. She's the communications manager for the World Apostolate of Fatima. And so give us the overview of this, Barb, because this is both online and in person, correct?
Yes, it is. Yes, and I'll start with, we declared a year of St. Joseph back in November, about a week before Pope Francis did, and we were thinking about, what do we want people to do this year? How do we bring the message of Fatima to people? And one of the most important devotions that have been forgotten is the First Saturday devotion. And so we decided we would do a series on every First Saturday and try to drive people to do those First Saturdays this year. And May 1st is a First Saturday. It happens to land on the year, the St. Joseph the Worker Feast Day, and so we decided to do a conference. And we keep going back to Sister Lucia's message to Cardinal Caffara,
right,
that the final battle of Satan against the kingdom of God will be against marriage and family, and we certainly see that happening in our world today. And so we wanted to do something reclaiming the family, starting with the father. The father is so important. We see how much the father has been denigrated in our media and entertainment, how even, you know, it's he's been driven out of the family. And one thing, when I've been talking to Devin Schott, who's one of our speakers, he's the co-founder of the Fathers of St. Joseph, and he said, you know, he goes back to that passage in the Bible where Jesus says, you know, the strong, when the devil plunders, he gets rid of the strong man, and then he plunders the household. So he's gotten rid of the father and the family, and now he's plundering the women and children.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought we would start this year with the father and getting the father back in the place in the family. And then next year we'll do a Reclaiming the Family Through the Mothers.
Wow. Yeah, but it's so crucial. And you mentioned the media. And I can remember seeing some of these shows, even the shows that were didn't have a lot of, let's say, sexual content, but were based on a family situation. Even back in the 80s and 90s, this is starting a while ago, where the father was always painted for the most part or portrayed as a doofus or someone who couldn't find his way out of a wet paper bag, and that it was the strong, independent woman who saved the world time and again, and that the man was only there to help her bear children.
Right. And compare that to the shows like My Three Sons, where Fred McMurray was such a strong leader in the family, and he guided those three boys, and, you know, father knows best, and those kinds of stories where the father wasn't, you know, overwhelming, and he had a rightful authority in the family, and they listened to him, they respected him.
In terms of you mentioned the message of Sister Lucia, that's so important in terms of, you know, being so prophetic. And it keeps coming back to me. I was telling you during the break, I had the opportunity to visit Fatima a few years ago on pilgrimage. It was very, very powerful. In terms of the message, are that going to be repeated through the speakers coming up on May 1st?
Well, they'll be speaking on very specific topics related to the conference. But yes, that is brought up in, especially Devin Schott, his talk. And it's just something we're trying to focus on. We're trying to get people to understand that even the getting rid of personal pronouns is, you know, Satan is trying to recreate man in his image. He doesn't have a gender. And so he's trying to destroy the two pillars of creation, which is the creation of the man and the woman in God's image, and then the creation of the union of the man and the woman, which produces life. He wants us created in his image. He's not male or female. And so we have to pay attention to what's going on and what our children are being taught. And that, I think, is this battle is becoming very, very fierce. And so we're trying to get people to stop and think about what is happening, and that our gender is very important. Our personal pronouns, I mean, I'm hearing that they want to get rid of even the term mother and father. And
oh, yeah, they're working. They've already done that in several locations, including a school in New York. You can't say the word mom or dad anymore.
It's getting to a tipping point where we have to stop this and start reclaiming our rightful role as Christians, and also the role of the father and the mother and the family, and that we have the authority over our children. We are the primary educators. It doesn't belong to the state. We are rapidly rushing toward what happened in Russia. And Teresa, I recently interviewed, we're doing our next magazine strictly on Russia. I interviewed Father Dan Maurer, who is him and Father Myron Effing have been in Vladivostok trying to rebuild the Catholic Church there. And when you listen to what communism did to the family, it not mm-hmm. only persecuted the church basically out of existence, but it totally destroyed the family. Mm-hmm. And it's even worse in Russia, because Russia was under communism for a lot longer than some of these other Eastern Bloc countries. And I'm seeing this, what they're doing here is the same thing they did there. They first tried to really push divorce. They had what they called a postcard divorce, where you didn't even have to go to a court or a judge and ask yeah. for a divorce. You just told your wife, I'm divorcing you, and that was it. Yeah. That threw a ton of children out on, you know, homeless. And there's no such thing over there as fathers having custody of their children.
Let me give the website. We're out of time, but I want to direct people, because you can watch the talks online, but you can also go to the shrine in person. It's coming up on May 1st, a Fatima St. Joseph Conference for Men and Women, all about reclaiming the family. Barb is with the World Apostolate of Fatima. ReclaimingTheFamily.com. Father Calloway, one of the speakers. ReclaimingTheFamily.com. Check it out. We'll be right back.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
There are legitimate differences of opinion in any religion. There are differences of opinion in Catholicism. But in Catholicism, you expect that people will take the teaching of its supreme authority seriously. To go diametrically opposed to those teachings is to not be a Catholic. Someone in the name of Catholicism is sponsoring the destruction of human life. Lives of unborn children. And they got the name Catholic on the door. The highest authority in Catholicism in the encyclical Humanae Vitae, Evangelium Vitae, is absolutely clear that no Catholic can support abortion, and that Catholics are responsible to take serious action against legalized abortion.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
How does man fulfill his vocation? Through life in the Holy Spirit, the Catechism tells us. This life is made up of divine charity and human solidarity and is offered as salvation. Man's great dignity is rooted in his creation in the image and likeness of God. It is fulfilled in his vocation to divine beatitude. It is by our own actions, doing good and avoiding evil, freely chosen acts, that man conforms to the good promised by God. Human beings make their own contribution to their own interior growth, the Catechism tells us. With the help of grace, man can avoid sin and grow in virtue. It is Christ who reveals the mystery of the Father and his love for man, thus making man fully manifest to himself and bringing to light his exalted vocation. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. Pope Francis, marking the 50th anniversary of the proclamation of St. Teresa of Avila as a doctor of the Church. I think I misspoke before and said it was in regards to her canonization, but more specifically, it's marking the 50th anniversary of the proclamation of her being named a doctor of the Church. And in a letter to the Bishop of Avila, he stressed her importance even today, especially in highlighting the role of women in the Church and in society. Now, my heart just was so excited. I just went, woo! I just felt this chill down my spine, because I just really admire St. Teresa of Avila so much. She had such a sense of humor. She said so many funny things, and she was so real with God. And so many people, I think, can relate to her, even though she was this incredible mystic. And we may have her writings are very deep, and we may have to go back and read them two or three times to kind of get the gist of what this brilliant mystic was saying. But in a very, very real way, she was very down to earth. And I think that's why I love her so much. And I love her feistiness. I was mentioning at the top of the hour, when I was explaining to you that I was going to be discussing this letter that Pope Francis wrote to the Bishop of Avila about St. Teresa of Avila, that she got into this discussion with the Lord when she was traveling around Spain and reforming the Carmelite order and going to another convent. And when you go to Avila, it's an incredible experience, because they have many of her the items that she used, like her walking stick, and they show her carriage, and they show some of the things that she brought with her when she went across time to time over the very, very rough Spanish countryside. And so you get the sense of how she was always on the move and trying to do something to grow the faith. But you also see the struggles that she had. And you can imagine, in looking at the very harsh materials that they had to work with back then, right, how difficult it must have been, and the challenge, not just in terms of the witnessing and the raising the funds and the support to build new convents and to reform the Carmelite order. You can really see the strength of this amazing woman. As a matter of fact, I have this sketch. I can't remember where I found it, but I have this sketch. One of my listeners sent it to me years ago of St. Teresa of Avila with a walking stick, and she's got a big smile on her face, and she's walking barefoot through the countryside of Spain. So anyway, on one of the many occasions that she was traveling, she was in a carriage, and it tipped over, and there's various traditions that go along with that story. Some people say that it tipped over. Some people say she fell into the mud. Whatever the case, when she got up and picked herself up and brushed herself off, she looked up to heaven and said, "No wonder, Lord, if this is the way you treat your friends, no wonder you have so few." She also said that people need to be joyful, to never lose your joy. And she said, "Lord, preserve us from sour-faced saints." So anyhow, I would encourage you to go to Catholic News Agency, as well as the National Catholic Register, ncregister.com, and they have a beautiful piece here regarding what the Pope said about St. Teresa of Avila. Pope Francis, hailing St. Teresa of Avila as an example of courage and spiritual motherhood, in a letter marking 50 years since the 16th century Spanish mystic was declared the first female doctor of the Church. Despite the five centuries that separate us from her earthly existence, the flame that Jesus lit within Teresa continues to shine in this world that is always in need of brave witness, capable of breaking any barrier, be it physical, existential, or cultural, Pope Francis wrote in the letter. The Pope's letter to the Bishop of Avila was read aloud at the inaugural Mass for an international congress on St. Teresa that is taking place, as we speak, in Avila, Spain, and is being held also virtually online through a live stream, and it runs through tomorrow. St. Teresa of Avila was an exceptional woman, as St. Paul VI defined her, Pope Francis said. Her courage, her intelligence, her tenacity, to which she united a sensitivity for the beautiful and a spiritual motherhood toward all those who approached her work, are an exemplary example of the extraordinary role that women have played throughout history in church and society. This is a very, very important point here. Because the Church is often wrongly criticized for, quote-unquote, oppressing women. And the media think the Church should operate as the world does. Okay? They don't understand the way the Church operates. And they don't understand motherhood in the spiritual sense. Or, of course, they don't understand a lot about it in the physical sense. And so when you look at the history of the Church, and you look at Our Lady, the Blessed Mother, right? The Queen of all saints. You look at all the great saints that the Church has canonized, all the great women and men the Church has canonized, and how many women are saints and how many women are doctors of the Church. There are now four doctors of the Church, with St. Teresa being among the first. Pope Paul VI declared St. Teresa a doctor of the Church on September 27, 1970. Now, this title of doctor denotes recognition of the importance of a saint's writings and teachings for Catholic theology. So if the Church is all about oppressing women, why is it given this incredible title to many women? And why is it canonized so many women? And why does it call our mother, the Blessed Mother, and our Lord's Mother, right, the Theotokos, why do they call her the Queen of all saints and give her such prominence in the Church and in the world? As the article says on ncregister.com, since St. Teresa, three other female saints have been declared doctors of the Church. St. Catherine of Siena, recognized with the title 1 week after St. Teresa, and as I mentioned earlier, St. Therese of Lisieux, as well as St. Hildegard of Bingen, and they were declared doctors by the Popes John Paul II and Benedict XVI, respectively. In the letter, Pope Francis saying St. Teresa of Avila continues to speak to us today through her writings and a message that is open to all. Having her as a friend, companion, and guide in our earthly pilgrimage confers security and peace to the soul. And for those of you who are not familiar with this great saint, she was a Spanish Carmelite reformer and mystic, born in Avila during the year 1515, the third child in a family descended from Jewish merchants who had converted to Christianity during the reign of King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella. When she was nearly 40, and this is the other thing that's so great about her, is that for those of us who come back to our faith later in life, as I did, we can relate to her as well. She experienced profound changes within her own soul in contemplative prayer and remarkable visions that seemed to come from God. Under the direction of her confessor, she wrote about some of those experiences in an autobiography, which she completed back in 1565. The revolution in her spiritual life enabled Teresa to play a significant role in the renewal of the church that followed the Council of Trent. She proposed a return of the Carmelites to their original rule of life, a simple and austere form of monasticism founded on silence and solitude that had received papal approval in the 12th century and was believed to date back to the Old Testament prophet Elijah. As a matter of fact, there is a beautiful church in Haifa dedicated to this connection between the Carmelites and the prophet Elijah. Together with her close collaborator, the priest and writer later canonized as St. John of the Cross, she founded what is known today as the Order of Discalced Carmelites, meaning barefoot, symbolizing the simplicity to which they chose to return to after a period of corruption. She was canonized March 22, 1622, along with, listen to this, St. Ignatius of Loyola, St. Francis Xavier, and St. Philip Neri. In his letter, the Holy Father encouraging priests, religious, and laity involved in the International Congress on St. Teresa to continue to spread her teaching. And I would say he's also speaking to all of us to continue to study this great saint, St. Teresa of Avila, and to spread her teaching. Another saying she had, God works among the pots and the pans. She's a very, very brilliant woman, but also very down to earth and helped us understand Jesus in our everyday life. We'll be right back.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Not everyone who's attracted to the Lord and to a life of service is necessarily meant to be a priest. So there's all kinds of forms. I mean, from, let's say, the brotherhood, if you want to stay within a formal religious context, but then all kinds of ministries within a parish, all kinds of lay ministries that you can do. So not everyone's called to the priesthood. A priest is someone who is dedicated, devoted to ongoing study and ongoing prayer, to be a spiritual father. As Pope Benedict said, one of his wisest remarks, he said, people want many things from a priest, but what they want above all is someone who's a master of the spiritual life. Hey, I'm great at this ministry, and hey, I'm great at organizing this meeting, and hey, I'm great. Fine, but ultimately what the people want is you're a master of the spiritual life. You got to be, therefore, trained in prayer and theology and spirituality and so on.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
We need EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Connection. It's a Wednesday morning, which means we go to Rome. And if you sign up for our Listening for God conference, listeningforgodconference.com, you'll see a number of EWTN wonderful personalities talking about listening for God in their lives. And Joan Lewis will be among them, listeningforgodconference.com. There's a lot going on. Let me just first ask you generally before we get into the Pope and the audience and things going on with the Vatican. there have been some stories, and you and I have been corresponding back and forth regarding the opening, and I know there was some more protests earlier this week in Rome. So what's the latest in terms of opening up the country in hopes of salvaging the pilgrimage and tourism season this year?
Yeah. Well, Teresa, as we speak, things like restaurants are supposed to be closed until the anything in the hospitality industry basically is going to be closed until April 30th. Now, that can change. I mean, on Fridays you often have the government, not often, but practically all Fridays, the government looks at statistics, et cetera. They make a decision, and whatever they decide on a Friday often goes into force the following Monday. So you just never know if things can open up earlier. But like you said, and we spoke about it last week, because I think it happened on the very Wednesday, the protests in front of the main government buildings in Rome. And for a couple of weeks, a couple of different protests, I mean, it was basically restaurants. But now it's been hotel people. Again, probably basically food, but sport, tourism, leisure, entertainment. Rome has a Globe Theater, and this was occupied this week by workers who called for the safe return of live shows after more than a year. And at this point, what I'm hearing wherever I go, and there's not too many places. I mean, I see more people at Mass on Sundays than, even just at church, at daily Mass, than I do anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Supermarkets aren't crowded. Drugstores aren't crowded. Well, people wait outside. The drugstore just down the block, there can be no more than three people inside at a time. Anyway, what I'm basically hearing talking to people is that they're tired, yeah, of the closures. It's been over a year. But they're tired of not having reasons for things to reason.
Right, right.
Of not having proof that restaurants, you know, are huge centers of contagion. Restaurants or other areas, and people have been so careful here to work out the social distancing, mm-hmm. to wear the masks, to go into a store, whether it's large or small, or into a restaurant when they're open, you know, for eating, which hasn't been for months. You have the hand sanitizer all over the place. So people really at this point want to say, okay, wait a minute, of the 496 deaths, I think it was yesterday, were how many of those people did you trace back to a restaurant or, you know, or something else? So you just wonder. Now, most of Italy now is in the orange color, mm-hmm. which still means, for example, restaurants, coffee shops, home-baked, et cetera, they're all closed except for takeout.
Right.
So, but again, that's just not a big business here unless it's either McDonald's or pizza places.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for travel, I think we're looking at the health minister, I know, is looking at some time in for things to kind of open up in June. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard June 2nd, Liz Lev, of course, a guy that we both know and love, was in town recently, and then she also was on my show last week, and then right after she was on, the information came out that they're looking at hopefully opening things up to tourism from outside of Italy and even including the United States in early June.
And I've even read, I'm trying to find that article because I kind of put little stickers on a whole bunch of things for you today, but there was one, I think it was the health minister, who said he was looking even at May. Mm-hmm. At some things to open up for travel. May, more travel from like abroad in June, but then May, we know the Vatican Museums will reopen. I'm sure Liz told you that. They intend
right.
to reopen on the 3rd. Now, apparently, last time they reopened, I want to say March 5th or something like that, and then had to close again. The last time they reopened, somebody took a picture and posted it and went all over the world of the crowded conditions at the Vatican Museums. And so they're going to have very strict rules about absolutely you must have, you don't just walk in anymore, you must have a reservation. They will be very severe about social distancing, masks must be worn, et cetera, et cetera. So there should not be any pictures being taken of crowds, you know, anywhere. We don't want that anywhere, much less the Vatican.
In some ways, though, if we think about, and we've talked about this going over there, and you've joined us on our pilgrimages, and in terms of the way the Sistine Chapel was so packed, I mean, you could barely even get a taste of the beauty of it, and you were just, you know, it was constantly silencio. You know, you'd hear that every 2 minutes in the crowds. It was just ridiculous. So in some ways, this may even be, I mean, a blessing in disguise that they're going to be limiting the crowds. I mean, obviously, from a health perspective, if people are still concerned, but to be able to have smaller groups in there, I mean, I think that would be great, because I know, talking with the tour guides, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, that they've been trying to get a more controlled atmosphere in there because they don't like having to, you know, shove their people through. And there's nothing that a travel agency can do, because the Vatican is controlling it. And from the Vatican's perspective, they would say, we want to get as many people in as possible because we want as many people to experience it. But then you don't experience anything when you're packed in like sardines, right?
But what they've even done in the last few years, and I'm talking pre-COVID, to you know, uphold the reputation of a wonderful, you know, museum, but also to downplay the fact that sometimes people walk out of the museum remembering the crowds more than the art that they may have seen, especially, and I know you're going to groan when I say this, in the Sistine Chapel. I mean, that was one of the more negative experiences when you go there. But what the Vatican did in recent years, and again, even starting pre-COVID, they had morning tours. You could go.
Yes, the early morning tours, which I recommend highly. Yep.
And okay, you have to get up earlier than you probably like, but still, you go, there's a small number of people, you begin with your ticket includes, you know, breakfast in their cafeteria, and then you have your tour. And then, for years now, I don't know how long it's been, but they have the Friday evening tours. These would begin, I think, in the spring and last until, you know, early or mid-October. And so that the last, you couldn't enter the museums, you know, after 6:45 or something like at night, and then they would be closed at 10 or 11. I don't remember the specific hours. But they were doing that to kind of help this overflow of people that they had. You know, obviously you want to remain popular. You have some of the most extraordinary art in the entire world to offer people. But again, if all they remember
are the crowds,
being hot and crowded and guards shouting, you know, silencio, that's not a good thing either. So,
yeah, I was doing a Tease Italy consultation a couple of weeks ago. It's starting to pick up again, thanks be to God, with people looking at the fall and next year. And there was a gentleman on the phone with me, and he said, well, you know, what's going to happen? I want to go back to the Sistine Chapel because the first time it was such a miserable experience. And this was many years ago. And I said, well, and I mentioned to him I said, that's why we can let you know about the early morning, the Friday afternoon, and then the fact that they're doing things differently now post coronavirus. So you're right. That tends to be people look around, they say, oh, my goodness.
And I don't know how many times I read in the ever brief periods in this COVID year plus that the Vatican museums have been open, the people who have gone just are you know, they have no words to describe the beauty because of the lack of crowds.
Yeah.
And the time, you know, just standing in front of your favorite painting for 5 full minutes if you want, instead of hearing, you know, move on. So that's, you know, obviously a very positive thing. And that's all I'm getting emails, by the way. You mentioned the fall and so forth. I'm getting emails and Facebook messages from people who are feeling positive. And some of them come to Rome, you know, once a year because they're on a pontifical council.
Right.
That usually has a plenary meeting. And I'm sure the councils, you know, you can save a lot of money on these things because when you house people and pay for a certain portion of their meals and stuff like that, that costs. So Zoom meetings and others, you and I know, we've done a lot of those.
Right.
That can be beneficial. But I know, for example, the Holy Father, he has to, any Holy Father has to want to get back to be with the faithful. So you had last Sunday, of course, was Divine Mercy Sunday. And for the second year in a row, the Holy Father spent that Sunday at the Church of of the Holy Spirit in Via Sassia, Spirit in Sassia, because, of course, it is the divine
love that church.
Spirituality
so
center in Rome.
Yeah.
Oh, I know, I do too. It's like, okay, on the left-hand side, you're going to pray to St. John Paul and his bigger-than-life image painting, and then on the right side, all dedicated to St. Faustina Kowalska. But again, people were at the Mass, but there's just something... There's something both beautiful and not so beautiful in the small gatherings. The small gatherings, they're intimate. All of a sudden, you don't have 500 people taking out cell phones for pictures. There's just something a little more religious and spiritual about these, more intimate masses. And I'm sure that would make a pope feel like he's in a parish church. But which, of course, he was last Sunday. There were, there was a migrant family. There were some refugees. There were some prisoners. Religious were there, and I think it was like three people to a pew, if I saw it correctly. And because there's just the main aisle and the pews on both sides of the main aisle, as you remember. But again, just when are the Pope's audiences going to be able to be? Maybe not in St. Peter's Square, but when can they be in the San Damaso courtyard, as they were last fall for a while? So, because I have to say, the Vatican, whether or not they have different ideas, they adhere to any of the rules and regulations that Italy puts out for crowd size or distancing or masks or anything else like that. So we shall see when and how they decide to open up for audiences, when they decide to allow people to come on Sundays to St. Peter's Square, because, again, that would be a so-called, quotation marks, center for contagion.
Right.
Any place you have crowds.
Yeah, but you're outside in St. Peter's and you can spread out.
I know.
I mean, it's a little bit different. I mean, in terms of, I still think, and I always tell people the audience is wonderful if you can get there and if it's open, but the Angelus is a great way to see the Pope, even though, he's up there at the Apostolic Palace. That little white box, but with the flag that's out, that's where you got to point to. But they do have the jumbotrons and the experience there of being in St. Peter's Square with so many people from around the world. It's such a universal event, and it doesn't require hours and hours and hours out of your time if you're not going to be in Italy for a long time. I'm really hoping... go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
No, but the beauty of for example, an Angelus or Regina Caeli, like we say now, is that you look around you and there's entire families. There may be a group of college students. You may see 5, 6, 7 seminarians from different countries, nuns. I mean, it's just the entire universal church is present there. And it's just this wonderful feeling to be part of that huge Catholic family that is praying together with their father, their Holy Father, in this beautiful square. So it is very meaningful, and it's a loss for all of us when we can't go there. I live 3 blocks away. I could go every Sunday, if I wanted to.
Well, believe it or not, it's already 53 minutes past the hour. Our time flies whenever you're on. Thank you for your beautiful words and your blog and your update on Rome. We're all eager, God willing, to get back there and to see it if we haven't seen it before. I encourage people to think and pray about it. And I really think that once things open up again, as soon as they open up and you feel comfortable, I would do it sooner than later, because to avoid those crowds, because eventually, those crowds are going to pick up again. And to go without the crowds is such a different experience. Joan, thanks so much, and thank you for taking part in the Listening for God conference. And we will be right back
on it.
Yes, so see you this weekend. ListeningForGodConference.com. And we'll be right back to let you know what's coming up on a Thursday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Stay tuned.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo.
Now is a great time to learn about CMF Curo as a pro-life Catholic healthcare option for your family. You can join anytime throughout the year. Plus, you'll experience an authentic Catholic community that cares about your health, spirit, mind, and body. Call 833-GET-CURO. That's 833-GETCURO. Or visit mycatholichealthcare.com to learn more about CMF Curo.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hello, Steve Ray here from Footprints of God Pilgrimages, and I'm so excited to announce two domestic pilgrimages this time. One to the Shrines of Wisconsin, where we're going to be joined by Cardinal Raymond Burke. We're going to have a consecration to St. Joseph and Our Lady of Good Help for the apparition of Mary that happened there. Also, we're going to St. Augustine, Florida, where the Catholic Church actually started, the first Mass ever, and we're going to be joined by Father Frank Pavone.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage line.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
55 minutes past the hour on a Wednesday morning. Encourage you to check out, as I mentioned, the letter the Pope wrote about St. Teresa of Avila. Also, his message on prayer from the audience today. Catholic News Agency and the National Catholic Register have both. Coming up tomorrow, you do not want to miss this show because we have two powerhouses on with us. We have the one, the only, Father Spitzer from Father Spitzer's Universe on his latest book. And then we have the amazing Mike Aquilina, and they're both very well known for their books and their talks and, of course, their regular presence right here on EWTN. Have a great Wednesday. The good Lord be with you, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on a Thursday. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.